You're listening to Package Your Genius, a weekly podcast designed to give you clarity around your calling and serve as a catalyst for your career, your business, and your big dreams. I'm your host, Amanda Miller Littlejohn.
Welcome back to Package Your Genius. I'm so excited today to bring a guest to you who is both a friend and colleague who has a powerful story of how she started her hair product company during a very tumultuous time in her personal life. Our guest today is Gwen Jamir, and she is the founder and CEO of Naturalicious. She's grown her beauty industry startup into one of the fastest growing hair care companies in the U.S. Naturalicious is the first company to develop an all-natural, patented hair care system that does the work of 13 products in only 4 simple steps. Prior to beginning Naturalicious, Gwen held the position of Global Digital Marketing Manager at Ford Motor Company, overseeing and executing the Big 3 automakers' digital marketing strategy. Later, she went to work for Uniworld, one of the world's largest multicultural advertising firms, where she spearheaded digital strategies for a client list that includes Ford, Home Depot, the U.S. Marines, Marriott Hotels, Three Musketeers, and many, many more. Gwen is the first Black woman to hold a patent for a natural hair care product. She's the winner of the 2014 Black Enterprise Elevator Pitch Competition, and she was named one of Hello Beautiful's 30 Under 30 Entrepreneurial Mavens. She's a frequent keynote speaker and highly requested panelist on business and entrepreneurship. Welcome, Gwen.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I am so excited to have you. You know, I have been obviously in touch with you and watching your meteoric rise, so to speak, with Naturalicious. And because so many of the listeners of Package Your Genius are stepping out to start their own enterprises and, you know, figure out how they can offer their gifts to the world, I wanted to bring you on to talk about your story of how you created this hair care product company that you basically started in your kitchen and have grown to this amazing enterprise that it is today. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got the inspiration to start Naturalicious?
Naturalicious started purely out of necessity. What I needed was not available on the market. And I think like a lot of women entrepreneurs, we can't find what we're looking for. And so we create it for ourselves and then it eventually turns into a business. And that's what happened to me. So I was pregnant with my son, who is now 5. But at the time I was pregnant with him and I had just seen this movie by Chris Rock called Good Hair. And a lot of listeners have probably seen it. And there's a part in the movie where he takes a soda can and he submerges it into a big tub of hair relaxer, which is what I was using at the time to straighten my hair and have been using since I was in the 3rd grade to straighten my hair. And this can, the soda can, disintegrates within a few minutes. And it just freaks me out because I'm pregnant and I'm emotional and I'm just like, oh my God, my kid's gonna disintegrate like this can, you know, because I know that anything you put onto your body has the potential to go into your body and affect what's happening inside of you. And with me being pregnant, that was a huge problem for me. And at that moment, I decided that I was going to not relax my hair for the 9 months that I was pregnant. I never intended to never relax my hair again. It was just supposed to be a 9-month thing for the health of my son. Well, my hair ended up being incredible. I went through a period like a lot of us do when we're relearning our hair. I didn't know what my hair looked like because I had been, you know, relaxing it since I was a kid. And I started to really love my hair for the first time in my life. I wanted my fingers in it all the time. It just felt amazing and it was growing and it was longer and it was thicker and it was awesome. The problem was, though, that I would go to the store and I would look for products that were actually natural because I was on this natural kick and also worked really well. And I couldn't find both. They either were natural and they sucked on my hair, or they worked amazing on my hair, or they were full of chemicals. And I was like, I can't believe there's nothing for me, you know, out here in any store that I'm going to. So I said, you know what, I'm going to go home and I'm going to make this myself. So I went home and I'm not a chemist by trade. My background is in marketing and communications. But I did grow up in a household where my mom is extremely resourceful. Like, she can do anything. If you need lotion, lotion, soap, she's got you. If you need your chairs reupholstered, she's got you. If you need some drywall hung up, she got you. You know, so it was just like my mom was this extremely resourceful person, and I just grew up submerged into that sort of environment, and I took after her in that way. So I came home and I went in my kitchen. I started looking through my cupboards, and I was like, what do I have that I know works really, really well on the hair and the body? So I had olive oil and almond oil and all these sorts of things. And I started throwing stuff together, and I figure out this little system for myself, and it worked fine. I mean, it did good for my hair, but it was
pause. So you took us from the kitchen cupboards to a system. So you had olive oil and almond oil, and you started mixing. Were you testing different formulas? Like, how long did it take you to figure out, okay, this formula of these three oils and this, you know, I don't know what's in hair care products, so don't get me.
So I knew the benefits of almond oil just, you know, growing up in the household with my mom, who was she's very into herbs and natural living and that sort of thing. If we would get sick, like the first thing she would do is like, give us some herbs rather than give us some medicine. You know, if the herbs didn't work, then we got the medicine, but the herbs were always first. And so I kind of grew up like that. And so I knew the benefits of almond oil versus what olive oil would do, or, you know, safflower oil versus jojoba oil and all these sorts of things. Mm. And so I had that bit of knowledge. And that's how I came up with the oil blend that I ended up creating. When it came to like the cleansers and stuff, I struggled a little bit. I had to do a lot of research, and, you know, it was a lot of trial and error. So altogether, I would say it took me about maybe a month and a half to come up with a suitable solution for myself. Mm-hmm. And what I was really trying to do was to come up with a system. I didn't just want like random products. I wanted like a whole system I could just use and be done with it. Mm-hmm. And so after a month and a half, I come up with the system, and it's great. It works fine. My hair looks good, but it's taking me a long time. And being new to this natural hair journey, I really was not prepared for the length of time that several, you know, naturals take. So I started asking around, and I'm talking to my friends and friends of friends who are natural and coworkers, and they're all like, yeah, girl, you know, wash day, it takes like, you know, 2 to 3, maybe 4 hours. Don't let you have kids, because then you're going to be taking all day or maybe the whole weekend. And I'm like, what? Why is there no solution on the market for this? Like, I don't know any other cultural group that's spending 4 hours plus on their hair, like as a ritual, you know, like that. Maybe they do it because they're at the salon and they just want to pamper themselves, but they're not doing it because they have to, you know? And I was like, this is crazy. So I just kind of accepted it like most other naturals do. And I just went about it as the status quo. Well, once my son was born, that had to go out the window, because I very quickly realized that babies don't care if you need 3 hours on your hair. They're like, look, I'm hungry, feed me, I want to eat, or, you know, I'm wet, hold me, change me, what have you. Like, you work on their time. And I quickly realized that I was no longer going to be able to just take the whole day to deal with quote unquote wash day. And that's when I went back into my kitchen and I said, you know what, there has to be a much better solution, because by this time products had started coming out that actually did work and were natural. So we had graduated from, you know, it being one or the other to quality products being created and being sold and readily available that did both. But none of them allowed you to get done in a reasonable amount of time. Most products were still, you were just buying one product to do one job. So you're buying a cleanser a shampoo to cleanse your hair, a conditioner to condition your hair, and so forth and so on. Well, I went back into my kitchen and I said, I'm going to reformulate this whole thing, and I'm going to get new ingredients, and I'm going to try new things, and I'm going to create a product line that is 4 products or less, because what I had created for myself was about 10 to 12 products. So I'm going to create 4 products max. And it's going to have to get me done in an hour, which was my son's nap time at the time. So I go back to my kitchen and I reformulate it. It took me about 3 months until I got it. And once I got it, it was like the gates of heaven just opened up. Not only was my hair incredible, not only was it thriving and stronger and healthier, but I was going from 3 hours on my hair to 30 minutes.
Wow.
And it was like, Oh my goodness. Like I felt like I had like this like top secret, like CSI sort of, you know, sort of thing that like, I was like, oh my gosh, what if people find out? Like right. It was like Secret Service or something. And I started using it on my hair. And like I said, my first system I had kind of come up with the 10 or 12 products, it was okay. It did the job, but this was like a whole nother level. And not only was my hair amazing, not only was it not taking me forever, but I didn't have the problems that a lot of us have with our hair when it comes to breakage, or when it comes to, a lot of us don't like shrinkage. So the shrinkage wasn't there anymore. And it was just incredible. And so that's the long story of how I came up with my product line.
Okay.
And I ended up, you know, that was just a hobby for a long time. And I'm sure we'll get into it in later, but it was just a hobby. It was never planned for it to be a business in the beginning.
So when you had your baby and you, that motivated you to trim time off of your wash day and your wash process, tell us about where you were professionally, personally. Were you still working at Ford? Were you on maternity leave? Had you left Ford at this point? What does the rest of your personal landscape look like, you know, while you were raising your new baby?
When my son was first born and I had come up with the system, which again was just for me at the time, I was still working. I was actually working at, I want to say when I first formulated the first system, like the 10 to 12 products, I was working at Ford. By the time I came up with what is sold now in stores, I had moved from Ford to Uniworld. So I had had my son by this time, mm-hmm. and I had moved over to working at Uniworld.
Mm-hmm. And things were going good there?
Yeah, things were going good. It was great. I had, you know, I realized that at Ford was an amazing place for me to have been at that time in my life. I was relatively fresh out of grad school. I was 6 months out of grad school when I got recruited by Ford. I was kind of thrown into this big sea of, you know, digital marketing that I didn't know a huge ton of information about outside of what I was doing on my own. And at that time, this was about 2009-ish, there weren't any brands, big brands at least, utilizing social media for connecting with consumers. People were connecting with other people like them, but brands weren't connecting with consumers. And so I was on that team that pretty much spearheaded and championed the idea of taking our voice as a brand, as a huge brand, and niching it down so that people could relate to us at Ford Motor Company. So by that time,
that's when I think we met, or at least we became acquainted online, because when I met you, you were in the communication space, which is where I was.
Yes.
And that was kind of how we connected.
Yes, we connected on LinkedIn. I remember it distinctly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so that's exactly what happened with that. When I had my son, though, I realized that I wasn't going to be able to keep up with the demand of what Ford required. Mm-hmm. So when I got recruited by Ford, it was like a dream job. You got to understand where I'm from, right? So I'm from the inner city of Cleveland, Ohio, go Cavs. Mm-hmm. And my parents are older. So my mom had me at 36 and my dad was 41 when I was born. So they're of the era where if you get a job at an automaker, particularly if you're at the headquarters, you've made it, you know? Mm-hmm. Even if you got a job in the factory, you know, you were doing good. But if you were in the headquarters, well, like, it was like, my baby done made it. We rich, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And but when I got that job, it came with a lot of perks. It came with a company car. I had an amazing bright blue Ford Mustang. It came with a company credit card, company cell phone, lots of company travel, like all the things that you think that you want. And as you know, is like the quote unquote dream job. But with all of that stuff came a somewhat of a tethering to the job. So, you know, if they wanted to call me at 2 a.m. and request a report to be delivered by 4 a.m., guess what? You better get your butt out of bed and do it, you know, that kind of thing. And so I realized after having my son that that wasn't going to be possible anymore. And so that's why I moved over to Uniworld. Now, Uniworld was a great place for me to be also. I actually got paid about $30,000 more.
Oh, wow.
Than I was at Ford, but I had less responsibility and I had a bigger title. So it was like a win-win, you know?
Right.
I didn't have as much travel because I could stay at home with my son more, and it was all good. And so that, because I wasn't traveling so much and because I was able to be home a little bit more, that gave me the opportunity to kind of start Naturalicious as a business. So Naturalicious started as a business. Like, I started getting things in place legally prior to me getting laid off at UniWorld.
Okay, so you had in your mind that, hey, this is not just my concoction that I'm making for myself and that works really well. Like, what inspired you to make it a business versus just having it be a product that you use personally?
Well, it was really when somebody decided that they wanted to pay me. So I was making this product and I was giving it to my family. I was giving it to my friends. And then friends of friends would call me and ask how much it cost. I didn't have a price for it, but I was like, oh, shoot, somebody wants to pay me. Let me come up with a website.
Was this because people were seeing their friend's hair and saying, you know, or hearing about how fast their friends were being able to do their hair? Like, how did people even find out about it to reach out and say, how much does it cost?
Yeah, so I have some friends that I've grown up with all my life, people I've known since I was like 4 years old, and we're still really, really good friends. A lot of those people they're socialites, if you will, in their respective spaces. And they would use the products and they genuinely loved them. They would use them and then they would go and, you know, go out wherever. And people would ask them, what do you use on your hair? Oh my goodness, your hair looks so good, girl. What's going on? And they would say, oh, you know, my best friend or, you know, one of my really, really good friends makes this hairline and I just adore it. And they would tell them about it. I started giving them flyers and they would just pass them out. And so that's how people started finding out about it, because not only would they tell them that their hair looked good, which is obviously the first attraction that people would have, but then they started telling them about how quickly they were able to get their hair done. So they would say, yeah, you know, I did this whole thing in like 15 minutes. And people would say, oh my goodness, are you kidding me? My whole wash day is like 5 hours or 2 hours or 1 hour, or I have two daughters with a lot of hair and we spend the whole day. And, you know, my friends would then say, well, you should try it out. Just check it out and see what you think about it. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how that got started. And it wasn't like a huge amount of customers. It was just, you know, people here and there trickling in. But nevertheless, it was the fact that people wanted to pay me solely off the strength of seeing someone else's hair, them telling them about it. Solely word of mouth, no marketing involved. And I believe if you're gonna do anything, you should do it with excellence. So I didn't want people buying from me, you know, like over the phone, you know, no, we had to have a website, you know. So I came up with a website. And it looked pretty good at the time. It looks a lot better now. But it looked good for what I was doing at the time. And again, it really wasn't a real, real business, but I loved what I did. I loved the fact that people would buy this product and I was providing a utility to them that was above and beyond their expectations and above and beyond what they were used to getting anywhere else. So yeah, you can buy hair products, but I never saw us as selling hair products. We sell freedom. We sell joy. And so we make hair products. And that's how I always viewed it, because my customer is generally a relatively high-powered woman. She's either got her own business or she's, you know, pretty senior in her company. She doesn't have a lot of time to spend just spending all day on her hair. She's not a product junkie. And I realized that not everyone who has natural hair is a naturalicious customer. Our customer, they want something that's going to work. They want it to be fast. They want it to be natural because they might use it on their kids. And I always viewed it as we make hair products, but we sell joy and we sell freedom. That was what people were attracted to.
Okay. So you're starting to get things in place. You're thinking, okay, people are asking me about it. So let me get my website together. Let me formalize things. You're still working at UniWorld. What happened next?
So things are going pretty well. I'm at UniWorld and we got a new, the founder of the company sold the company to one of his employees. And she then pretty much went through and wiped the slate clean and cleaned house. And so I didn't think I would be affected because she was the one who hired me. And so I was like, well, I'm not gonna be ousted here because she hired me. And like we got along really well. Like we were friends, even, you know, so to speak. They were based in New York and we were in Detroit. And it never crossed my mind that I might be the one who was going to be outed. And so some time went on and I was going I was going through a divorce by this time. The divorce was pretty, you know, financially debilitating. I was kind of broke by this time because I was paying the divorce attorney. I was the breadwinner in my family. So I was pretty much paying all the fees and it was just a lot going on. By this time, my son was 2 and I ended up getting laid off from my job, completely blindsided, did not expect it. And in retrospect, the way that it happened is the way that it should have happened for my story to take place. But it was kind of shady, like the way they did it, to be honest, because I was like, am I being fired or am I being laid off? And they were like, well, neither. We're eliminating your job. Like, you've done an amazing job. You're great. You know, we like you a lot. We're downsizing some things and with the new regime, and we just don't have a need for your job. And I wanted to be so angry. And I even went to the extent of trying to make myself angry. Like, Gwen, why aren't you angry? You should be angry. But I wasn't angry because I had been praying for quite a while. Because by this time, I was really loving Naturalicious. It's all I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Like, when I was at work, it was all I was thinking about. I just couldn't wait to get home to do Naturalicious stuff. Mm-hmm. And they let me go without that warning because, you know, in those situations, most companies will say, hey, we're eliminating your position in, you know, a month or 2 months or 6 weeks or what have you. You should, you know, see if you can find something else. I didn't get that. Mm-hmm. And had I gotten that, though, I would have gone and looked for another job. And I probably would have gotten another job because I'm good at what I do. And I'm highly qualified. I'd have the education, blah, blah, blah. So I would have got another job and I wouldn't be doing Naturalicious right now. I would be working at that other job. And the thing about me is that I really hate working for other people. I really, really do. I always feel like I'm in a cage and I can't just be creative and free like I want to. So it was a blessing that they did that in the way that they did. And I feel like it was completely divine order because I had been praying for a while and I said, God, when it's time for me to quit this job and do Naturalicious full time, I need you to send me a clear and convincing sign. I don't do well with subtleties. I need it to be like in my face. And so I don't know what's more clear convincing than being laid off 30 days before your divorce is final, having no money, literally $32 in the bank and a 2-year-old and all your family's 3 hours away.
Wow.
So yeah, it was rough. It was really, really rough. And I walked out of that building with my box of stuff and I texted my friend and I said, I just got let go. Smiley face. And she's like, smiley face? What is wrong with you? Let's go to lunch. So we go to lunch and we have lunch. She's like, what are you going to do? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm just going to do Naturalicious. She's like, are you going to look for a job? I was like, no, I don't want to. She's like, how much money do you have? I'm like, I don't have any money. Like, literally, my plan was to get through the divorce process and then stack my money back up and then leave my job. But, you know what they say about when you're planning, you know?
Right.
And that didn't work out. And so I was like, I have no money, but I'm going to go home and get started. So I pull out my debit card to pay. She's like, girl, you ain't got no money. How you gonna pay this?
So you got to love that friend that's got right. your back.
So she was like, I got it. So I went home and I even tried to cry. Like, I was like, why am I not mad? Like, I want to be mad.
But you were excited.
I was excited, but still scared though. You know, I mean, I got $32 in the bank. My mortgage is due in 30 days. You know,
right. What are we going to do?
Right. But what I also didn't want to do, I didn't want my son to see us fall. Like, his dad already wasn't in the house anymore. And the nice thing about our divorce was that he and I, we're good friends now, but at the time we were, you know, at odds, but my son never saw that. Mm-hmm. And I wanted it to remain that way for him. The only difference I wanted his life to have was the fact that daddy wasn't living with us anymore. Mm-hmm. I didn't want us to have to move back home with grandma. I didn't want us to have to downsize to a smaller, you know, apartment or house or what have you. I wanted his life to be as normal as possible. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that really pushed me to say, you don't have time to sit around and cry. You've got to make some stuff happen, like mm-hmm. right now. So I didn't have the luxury of doubting myself because my back was against the wall and I needed money. And there happened to be a Whole Foods store that was opening in Detroit. And at that time, this was big news because it was the first Whole Foods store that was opening in an inner city. Mm-hmm. And I would pass this store when I was working. I was like, oh, it'll be really cool if Naturalicious could get in there. And I just said, nope. they're not going to accept me because who am I? Like, my biggest customer is my mom. You know, that doesn't count. And so when I got laid off, though, my tune completely changed. And I was like, I'm about to call Whole Foods and we about to see if they're going to take me. So I made a lot of phone calls. That resourcefulness, very resourceful. Figured out who I should talk to. Now, the store's not even open. So I'm like, there's nobody at the store because the store's not even, it's still being built.
Right.
So I'm trying to figure out who I can talk to. I finally figure it out. I get an email address. Long story short, I end up getting somebody to agree to have a meeting with me. Mm-hmm. And we have the meeting. And it's this white guy. He's like balding and he has straight hair. He really does not understand the struggle, you know?
Right.
And so he's like, why are you guys spending so much time on your hair anyway? You know? And so lo and behold, again, all divine order, lo and behold, there's the buyer from Chicago randomly happens to be in town that day. And she's a Latina and she has curly hair. And so she's like, hey, can I join this meeting? And he's like, yes, please come over. So she comes over and she gets it like completely. And she's like, oh my goodness, I've never seen anything like this. Like a system. It's a very concise, simple system, 4 products. Does the work of 13 products. Like every product replaces at least 3 of the products you normally use. This is incredible. We need to sell this. Let's do this. Like 20 minutes into the meeting, she's like, let's do it. Wow. And I was on the floor, like in my head, right? I was just like, oh my gosh. Now, you got to understand, I was starting, like, this company started as a company, like a real legit company, because one, I loved what I was doing. I already had some things in place. But like the real kick in the pants was the fact that I didn't have any money, you know, and I need to make this into a business, because even though I could go find a job where I was in my career, it's not just a one shot interview. It's, you know, you apply, you get the interview, you have maybe 2 or 3 more interviews and then you get the job and you start like three months later, you know, and I needed something that was going to be immediate. So for me to just be in my kitchen and suddenly have Whole Foods, it was just one store, by the way, but nevertheless, it was Whole Foods, which completely validated my brand to anybody else who had never heard of me. And it was just amazing. So we got into that store and we did really well. We got moved into, you know, several other stores and we just kind of kept that going. And now Naturalicious is internationally sold on 3 different continents. And in Whole Foods, and also in other chains in the U.S., and then in independent stores, too. So that was 3 years ago.
So how were you, when you got the deal with Whole Foods, and, you know, you got this product, and I'm assuming you were making it at home, correct? Uh-huh. And it was you who was making, because it was your formula. How did you then scale your production to meet the demands of working with a retailer?
So for a long time, I made the product in my house. So I kind of outgrew the kitchen. So I upgraded to my basement. And after that, I then moved into a dedicated commercial facility, which is where we are now. And I have a team of people now, and I have a crew, and they do all that for me. But for a long time, I was making it. I was doing everything. I was making, I was filling, I was bottling, I was labeling, I was marketing, I was shipping, whatever had to do with Naturalicious, you name it. And I was a single mom at the same time. And I did it that way because I really didn't want to take on any debt. I'm like, you know, I'm a single parent and the last thing I need is another bill to pay. But it also allowed me to be, I call it allowing the business to tell you when to grow, right? So I think a lot of people take on things or supply chains and they create these things because it's what we're told we're supposed to do. And, you know, it is what we're supposed to do. But for me, I was like, I need this to grow gradually so I'm not overwhelmed. And as long as I'm able to keep up with whatever it is that I need to keep up with, we're good. Once we get to the point where I can't keep up with it, then we're going to have to bring on help. And so the first thing that I did was I outsourced my shipping. So we outsourced the shipping to a fulfillment center, which is about 20 miles from where I live. And they handle all the shipping because I found the sales were coming in so quickly that I could no longer make the product and ship them out in a timely fashion. So the shipping went away. We outsourced that. Then customer service was the next thing that got outsourced. So I remember being in the grocery store with my son, and for some reason, my son decided it was a good idea to growl. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. And because he was like 4 at the time, and that's what kids do. So he's growling randomly, like very loudly, as this customer is calling in on my cell phone, no less, to place an order. And my kid's growling. And then there's like a cleanup on aisle 5 and they're on the overhead. You know, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so unprofessional.
Right.
Like, I can't. So the lady's like, is everything okay? I'm like, oh yeah. We just got other, you know, other agents on the phone. Like, the only agent was me, you know? And so I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't do this anymore. And at that point, I knew that I had to bring on a customer service team. And so it was like these things that once I found out that I couldn't do it anymore and provide the level of premium service that my customers were used to getting, it was time to outsource that.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you said the orders are coming in? So you went from, I feel like obviously Whole Foods is huge, but in terms of even before Whole Foods or even just having the product on Whole Foods shelves and having, you know, like you said, orders coming in and people who are not purchasing it at Whole Foods, ordering it. What would you say was the biggest reason or the biggest tactic that you used to kind of get it to a place where the orders are coming in and, you know, you have more orders than you can both create and fulfill? Like, what, in terms of your marketing, how had you spread the word to grow awareness of it so quickly?
Well, there are a few things. So one, I started to pay attention to the 80-20 rule. And so I started to notice, one, who was purchasing from me all the time, and also who was purchasing from me and being most loyal. Mm-hmm. Who was signing up for our VIP club? So the VIP club is basically an auto subscription program. You get the product delivered to you every, you know, 1 or 2 months. And so who are these people that never cancel, they never skip, versus the people that sign up because you get 15% off and then they cancel after the first month? So I started interviewing them. And I would, you know, literally do a demographic and psychographic analysis on each of them who allowed me to. And I started to see a theme that the people who were most loyal, like even if there was another brand that was on sale or a new product that came out from somebody else, they didn't care. They were only buying Naturalicious. Those people were who I talked about earlier. So those people were the relatively upwardly mobile women. They probably have like a kid or two under the age of 18 in the household. They are they're not price sensitive, and they're very concerned with getting the job done quickly because they want to look good and they need to look good and they want to feel good. Mm-hmm. And those were my customers. You know, they're generally like 25 to 50, those sorts of people. And I started only marketing to them because the way I see it is Nike basically targets athletes. Mm-hmm. But people, I buy Nike and I'm for sure not an athlete, you know, so... So just because you target one group of people doesn't mean that other people won't come along for the ride. But what are you spending your time and your money on? And so I started focusing solely on the people who were, you know, basically the 20% of my customers who were the 80% of my sales. So the 80-20 rule. Mm-hmm. That was the first thing that I did. I also basically came up with a muse. And so my muse is Shonda Rhimes. Shonda Rhimes is very, like, I put everything through what I call the Shonda filter. So Shonda is a very colorful character. She's very friendly, but she's also a boss, very literally and figuratively. She's a mom. She has 2 little daughters. And I don't see her wanting to spend a whole lot of time on her hair. I see her wanting to look good, but she wants to look good quickly.
Right.
And so everything that we do at Naturalicious, and it's more than just me now. Like, I have a digital marketing person and all this other stuff. We take it through the Shonda filter. Like, we have a big picture of Shonda Rhimes' face on the wall.
I love that.
Does this fit the Shonda filter? Do these colors... would she be attracted to these colors? Would she be attracted to this copy, to this font? Like, everything, it goes through the Shonda filter. So that was the second thing. And then as far as so that was really like the defining and the branding part of it. Once that part was done, it was finding out, okay, when we do our marketing, where's the most of the customers coming? I always hear people say, you know, do Facebook ads. And for us, we don't really see a whole lot of conversion with Facebook ads. I mean, we get people coming to the site, but as far as buying, they don't really buy, for at least when it comes to us. However, when we do things that allow us to connect directly with the consumer, we started to see that those convert amazingly well. Mm-hmm. So Periscope has been a huge, huge source of new customers for us. Mm-hmm. And that's just me getting on every day or every couple of days, you know, just talking about whatever. It might have something to do with business. It might have something to do with beauty. It might be a behind the scenes look at our facility where we produce, like anything that allows me personally to connect with the consumers, because people do business with people they like and they trust, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, it's easier for me to sell to you if you feel comfortable with me as a person, you know what's behind the brand.
I remember too, in addition to all the social media stuff, there was a season where you were doing a ton of business pitch competitions. And one of those pitch competitions was one that I had the honor of judging, the Black Enterprise Elevator Pitch Competition at their 2014 Entrepreneurs Conference. Can you talk about how pitch competitions helped you to spread the word and raise money for the business?
Yeah. So the nice thing about pitch competitions is that when you're at a conference, right, it's usually several hundred people, and there's no possible way for you to talk to every single person. And a lot of times when you're at these conferences, you're just hoping that you happen to sit next to somebody or strike up a conversation with someone who is going to help you, or you're going to be able to help them or what have you. It's going to be a mutually beneficial relationship, but oftentimes it's just not. It's like somebody who just started their business yesterday and you're like, right. Dang, like I needed to talk to somebody a little bit more, you know, that has a little bit more time in the game. And the nice thing about pitch competitions is that you get the opportunity to talk to everyone at that conference at one time. And there's just a select few of you who have the opportunity, because there's usually about 5 to 10 people.
What made you apply to your first pitch competition? Like, which one did you see and say, hey, I think I could do that? Maybe, you know, did someone tell you about it? Or were you like, I'm going to do this strategically?
Yeah. So actually, the Black Enterprise one was my first, like, real pitch competition, mm-hmm. to be honest. And that was a friend of mine was going to the Black Enterprise conference, and she tagged me in a post that was made by Black Enterprise that there was this $10,000 pitch competition. And at that time I was going through, like I had just gotten into Whole Foods and my labels were real basic looking. I mean, I had made them and I'm not a graphic designer, but I had gotten into Whole Foods, but I knew that I need to up level this if I wanted people to actually buy it off the shelf. And so I was like, ooh, if I could win this money, I could get these labels done. I could get a second filling machine. You know, I'm thinking about all the things I could do mm-hmm. with this money. And that was my first pitch competition. And I was not nervous at all. I entered and I paid attention to what previous winners' submission videos look like. And I pretty much mimicked them because I don't believe in reinventing the wheel. So I did that. And I felt confident. I mean, I didn't want to be cocky, but I felt confident that I was going to probably be a finalist based upon my video versus the other videos. And so I got to be a finalist. And once I got to the finalist stage, though, then that's when the nerves kicked in. Because at the Black Enterprise Conference, the stage, I mean, it's a stage. Like, you're on a stage and there's lights and everybody's staring at you. And I'm generally comfortable talking in big crowds, but this was a different level sort of thing. So
it was a production for sure.
It was. And to your luckily though, Lauren, you're and my friend, Lauren Malian was so generous as to coach me on my pitch the day of the pitch. And I remember seeing her. She was the very first session of the Black Enterprise Conference. And I didn't know that she was a speaker. I thought she was like an attendee. And I was like, this chick is fly. Like, I like her, you know? And she ended up being a speaker. And I just felt like, I was like, she can't be that much older or younger than me. And she's relatable. And so when I found out that they were offering pitch assistance, I was like, oh, I hope Lauren is my coach. And she ended up being my coach. And I wanted her to help me because I felt like she would get me and she wouldn't try to change what I had already come up with. She would just tweak it and make it better. And that's exactly what happened. And with her help, I ended up winning the pitch competition. And then I just went on to do more because I did not want to do any equity investment deals at the time. I just wanted to raise money for the business. So I ended up entering 12 pitch competitions and I won 10 of them.
In the next, what, year, 2 years?
In the next year and a half.
So after you won the Black Enterprise Elevator Pitch Competition, which had a $10,000 prize, and I think even more valuable, they paired you with a mentor from Black Enterprise Magazine, Alfred Edmond.
Yes. When
did you say to yourself, because then I remember I just started to notice you were popping up at all of these different pitch competitions. Did you say, hey, this was pretty easy to win. Like I'm pretty good at doing a pitch. Why don't I use this as a strategy to just get out here to both market myself and raise additional monies for my company? Did you think of it that way? Like, let me look up and find 10 or 12 other competitions that I can enter in the next 12 months?
Yeah, yes and no. So my initial idea was that, okay, I see all these people on Shark Tank and The Profit and shows like that, and they're giving up equity for their businesses, but I just won this pitch competition so I can get money and not give up any of my business. And let's see if I can, I just won this one. Let's see if I can win another one. And the second one I entered, to be honest, my head had gotten a little big because I lost that one. But
really?
I was like, I got a little bit, because I'm like, oh, I just won this one. Psh, this is going to be easy. And I ended up not winning that one. And that like brought me back down real quick. Like, okay.
That is hilarious.
Does not mean that you're going to win all of them. So I had to be, you know, I had to make sure I was on my A game, because some people who end up being finalists for pitch competitions really aren't well equipped to pitch. But then there's some people who are excellent at it. And you never know what's going to be your competition. So, yes, I definitely saw it as a way for me to raise money. And then I started noticing that people, like, you know, when you're pitching on that stage, you don't know who's in the room. There's new customers, potentially. There may be investors. There may be a lot of these pitch competitions are sponsored by big corporations like Target and Macy's and what have you. The representatives from those companies are in the room, and they want to talk to you afterwards because you've had the chance to actually tell them all about your business in a 30-second to 2-minute pitch, which you might not have the opportunity if you're just walking around. So, yeah, I definitely saw it as a way to acquire new interest in my business as well as to raise the money.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So things are humming along at this point. You are getting these pitch competitions are helping you raise money, and they are helping you raise exposure. What would you say was kind of a tipping point for you in Naturalicious when you said, okay, this is clearly no longer a hobby. I am, like, was there ever a moment when you thought, this business is going all the way? I'm going to be a beauty company that rivals, you know, the big beauty companies that people know and that are on the shelves of major retailers. Like, was there a moment when you realized, oh my God, or was there, you know, a deal or a customer or an opportunity that just kind of changed everything for Naturalicious?
I would say, I mean, it became a real business for me the day that I got laid off. So that was March 4th of 2013. Mm-hmm. And I always call that my emancipation day. And I actually, we celebrate it. Like, we have cake. Like, it's a big deal, you know, around here. So that was really, you know, the first time when I knew that this was for real going to be a business, and it had to be a business, that there was no plan B. I didn't really want to have a plan B, because I feel like when you have a plan B, you kind of, you know it's there, and it's a crutch. And I didn't want there to be a crutch. When I got into Whole Foods, I started to feel pretty legit. Like, okay, it's going to be less of a challenge for me to convince people that this business is viable and it's real, because Whole Foods has kind of co-signed on it for me.
Right.
So that was good. We ended up getting President Obama's team when he was being re-elected. He ended up being president again. They reached out and asked me to include my product line into his VIP gift bags that were being given out. So so that was really like pop my collar, like, you know, like, I'm doing this. Like, how did the White House even find out who I was? Well, I ended up finding out that one of those socialite friends of mine has a friend who works at the White House, and that friend happened to be visiting and was asking her about her hair. And when it came time for the president to be reelected and go through his inauguration and have his inauguration ball, they were looking for products, you know, higher end products that they considered to be included in their gift bags. Mm-hmm. And I think there may have been a concerted effort also to make some of those products Black owned.
Mm-hmm.
That was never stated, but I think it might have been. Mm-hmm. And so they called me and asked me to include them. And I had to create, now Amanda, I was doing this by hand at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I had to make 500 of each of my products.
Oh my God.
I had 4 products, right?
Wow.
So, and I had to put in a nice little gift bag or a gift box, and it was a nightmare making that stuff. But I got it done, and it was a huge, huge thing for me. So I would say that was huge. When I ended up getting the patent for my business, for my idea.
Yeah, tell me about the patent. Tell our listeners about what the patent covers and how you came up with the idea to patent your product.
So my mom is... Oh, my mom takes all the credit for the patent, to be honest.
Okay.
She's the one who was like, Gwen, you need to patent this product. And my mom is one of those people, she's not the mom who's going to co-sign on what you do just because you're her daughter or you're her child. Like, she will be very quick to say, hey, you don't need to do that. That's not good. You know, that doesn't look good. It doesn't work. Or I wanted to be a singer at one point when I was younger. And she's like, you need to go back to college. You know, like that kind of thing. So she's very straight shooter from the hip. And when she used my Moroccan Rasool 5-in-1 clay treatment and she loved it, I knew that it was like really, really good. Because if she said that it was good, then it was good. Because she can be very critical.
Mm-hmm.
In a good way, though. And so she's like, Gwen, you need to patent this product because somebody else is going to take it. You're going to be sitting at home and you're going to see a L'Oreal commercial and they're going to have your product and you're going to be sitting at home twiddling your thumbs mad at the world because you didn't protect your intellectual property. And I was like, oh my gosh, you're right. That would be so bad for me to see that commercial and know that they stole my stuff, because it happens all the time, you know? And
it happens a lot in the beauty industry.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it happens in the beauty industry. It happens in the fashion industry. I have a friend just, you know, yesterday on a friend of mine who had one of her fashion designs literally stolen and sold by some other company on Facebook. I have another friend who has a makeup company and her packaging design and her product was stolen by a relatively well-known company, you know, and it happens a lot because it's not, you got to understand, it's 2016, right? So with so much time that has passed in the world since patents have been available, there's not a whole lot that is truly brand new, a truly brand new invention. And that's what you have and be able to prove if you are looking to patent something. Now, trademarks and copyrights, they're a little bit easier to get, but patents are really difficult to get because you have to prove that it is truly an invention that no one else would have ever thought of, no one else ever has thought of, that sort of thing. And so I started on this journey to find how I could patent my product. And I realized that it was going to cost me about $10,000 to $20,000 to do that. And I didn't want to spend $10,000 to $20,000 because once you apply for the patent, if you hire an attorney and you don't get your patent approved, you don't get your money back.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is like me giving this money away on a wing and a prayer, hoping that I'm going to, make this happen.
Yeah.
So I started researching like, okay, can I do this on my own? Right. Because I had done everything else on my own so far, getting that resourcefulness, right? So I had already been making my products. I had figured out a way to, I wasn't really scaling at that point, but I was keeping up with demand as much as I could. And so I was like, let me figure out how I can get this patent on my own. So I realized that I could apply on my own. I didn't need an attorney. And in doing so, I would save about between $8,000 to $18,000. And I was like, wow, that's a huge amount to save, you know, mm-hmm. versus going for an attorney. And I started going to the library. I would go to the library and I viewed it just like I was going to college. My son would go to preschool and I would be at the library Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 12 to 2. And it was basically like my patent law class. The librarians knew me by name. At my local local library that have a whole section dedicated to intellectual property and intellectual property law. There's also, I'm very blessed to live in Detroit because we have the first satellite office of the USPTO, which is the US Patent and Trademark Office. So I was able to go there and have them help me. They can't tell me what to do, but they can definitely lead you in the right direction. And there's several other cities who have these satellite offices now, but at the time it was just Detroit. And I learned the patent law. It took me like 8 months to really, really just learn it just by submerging myself into it. And after that 8 months, I felt comfortable enough to go ahead and apply. So I applied and I filled out the application, the extremely long application. I wrote the report that I had to write. I drew the drawings and all that stuff. And 15 months after that, I was granted a patent. Now, this is significant because most patents can take up to like, can take a minimum of 3 years to be granted. I have a friend who applied for a patent 5 years ago and he's still waiting, you know. So for me to get it in 15 months, it sounds like a long time, but it's relatively quick in comparison. And once I got that patent, it was like, okay, great. Like no one's going to be able to take this and run with it and duplicate it. But then I ended up finding out that I was the first Black woman to have a patent on a natural hair product. And it was just like, wait, nobody else has patented a hair products? What about Madam C.J. Walker? You know, so I'm asking all the same questions that a lot of people probably ask. And I end up realizing that she didn't have a patent on a natural hair product. She had a patent on a tool that she had created. And people started to find out about the story and, you know, articles were written and it just kind of blew up. And actually, that was a huge way of people finding out about Naturalicious. They wanted to support something that I was doing, but they also were finding out about this phenomenal, like, system that's going to completely reduce their hair washing time. So the news of the patent was a huge blessing for me just to be able to retain the rights to my business and all that comes along with that, you know, if should I decide in the future to exit my company or, you know, whatever I choose to do with it. But it also ended up being a really great source of inspiration for so many people because even now I still get emails several times a week from people saying, you know, I heard about you when I read your story or I heard your story and the fact that you, you know, kind of started from the bottom and then, you know, you rose and you're doing all this stuff and you have a patent and you're the first. That's so inspirational to me. And now I'm going to go and try and patent my idea because I don't think that a lot of us have realized that we can do that on our own, you know, just like I was. I didn't think I could do it on my own. So it's been great. It's been a really, really great journey. And the biggest thing for me, again, has been like the inspiration that it's given people to go out and pursue whatever dreams that they may have had.
That is incredible. And how did having the patent, obviously, besides the media frenzy that it created, how has that affected the business?
Well, it definitely gave us more brand awareness, much faster and in greater numbers than my own just basic marketing efforts. Mm-hmm. I still get, you know, requests to do interviews, which is always great for the business. I mean, you and I are talking right now, but you and I are friends, so it's a little bit different. So, I still get requests from people wanting to do interviews about that. I've been contacted by a few national TV shows to do stuff with them about it. And that opportunity would not have presented itself had the patent never happened. So like I said, all praises and kudos to my mom. And she is very quick to let people know that
you never would have done it without her pushing you.
I was like, give me my props, you know. So, but she's extremely proud. And it's really cool for me too, because just 3 days ago, I was at the mall and I was with my son and my boyfriend. And this girl like rolls up on us. She's like, excuse me, aren't you the girl with the hair? Don't you make like hair products or cosmetics or something? And I'm like, yeah. No, we're at the mall. You know, we're not like at a networking event. We're not like, you know, anywhere that this would make sense.
You've been cited.
Yeah. And she's like, oh my gosh, I read your story and you look so familiar. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's gotta be her. And, you know, I have this like little jewelry line. And I just, you know, I've been thinking about making it for sale and I haven't, but I read your story and I put up my website and now I have customers and just thank you. You know, and like, I'm such a crybaby because like now I'm like tearing up like, oh my gosh, like you started your business because you read my story, you know. And that means so much to me to be kind of like an inspiration and encouragement to people, particularly single moms, because I feel like as a single parent, a lot of times you become a single parent and it's like nobody sets out to be a single parent. You just, you know, it happens for various reasons And a lot of times you end up feeling like, I can't do this. I got to raise this baby and I got to do this on my own. And my dreams are just going to go to the wayside. And the fact that a lot of single moms come up to me, or, you know, I speak at a lot of their events or things that are supporting them, and to see like a light bulb go off, like you still come first. You know, you don't put yourself on the back burner or your dreams on the back burner just because this situation happened to you. And that's been really great. And so I've been really, really lucky that our sales have been so great since, you know, since the patent thing happened, that we've partnered with Dress for Success. So all of our mislabeled or crookedly labeled products, we actually donate to Dress for Success because, and for those who don't know, Dress for Success is an organization that helps women who have been displaced from the workforce. A lot of them are single parents. A lot of them are victims of abuse and things like that. And so we provide those hair products and hair education to them so that, you know, because when you have a good hair day, you just feel like you can take on the world, right?
That's so true.
We give that to them and they're so appreciative. And, you know, they actually get high quality, really good products that, you know, these products are like $23 for shampoo. You know, it's not like, you know, $5 shampoo, you know? So they're very excited, and it's been great to be able to give back in that way.
So what's next for you in Naturalicious?
That's a great question. So we just moved into a dedicated facility, like I mentioned, a few months ago, and we are really, really, really excited about bringing our shipping back in-house. So like I said earlier, we outsourced that when I could no longer do both jobs, but because now I have a team of people who make the products and bottle it and all that stuff. By the way, all of which are special needs. And it's amazing because it's another way of giving back to the community, because they're all special needs from the inner city. And a lot of employers don't want to hire them. And so we welcome them with open arms, and they're absolutely amazing. We're actually hiring more special needs folks to handle our in-house shipping. So we're going back to that extremely customized and personalized customer experience. So that's a big initiative that's going to happen in September. Also going through a little bit of a rebranding, not really a rebranding, more like a facelift. So we're going to have like same colors, all that stuff, still putting everything through the Shonda filter, but we're kind of giving the look of the packaging and things like that a facelift. And so it'll be a little bit higher end looking. So those are the two big initiatives throughout the rest of the year. My goal for Naturalicious is for us to be in stores like Sephora and Ulta. So those are our definite goals. Love being at Whole Foods. Whole Foods really they were the ones that gave me my first shot. And so we're not in all Whole Foods stores, but we're in several. And so to get into the rest of their stores is another goal as well. But yeah, the rest of the Whole Foods stores, Ulta and Sephora, maybe even Macy's, and really looking to get into Brazil. That's a relatively untapped market. I hope none of my competitors are listening. But it's relatively untapped, but there's a huge market there for what we do. So, and plus, I need an excuse to go to Brazil. Like, why not? So,
Exactly.
Yeah, those are the goals.
Well, this has been so inspirational and empowering just to hear your story of how you started with something that many people may think of creating in their kitchen. You know, we either be that a food product or a hair product or a body product, and taking that into a full-fledged company that is producing products that are going around the world. I'm so proud of you and excited for your success. And I thank you for sharing that journey with our Package Your Genius listeners. And let us know how people can learn more about you, learn more about Naturalicious, find your products, and anything else you want to share.
Sure. So you can find all of our products on our website at naturalicious.net. And I'm going to spell that. It's N-A-T as in Thomas, U-R-A-L, like Larry, I-C as in cat, I-O-U-S as in Samantha, .net, not .com, naturalicious.net. You can also, if you're interested in finding out if our products are near you, just click on the where to buy link, which is in the top navigation bar, and you can just put in your zip code. It'll tell you the closest store to you. Also, make sure you follow us on Instagram. We are at Naturalicious and the number one. Don't follow Naturalicious, just plan on Naturalicious, because it's not me, and that's somebody else who took my name, trying to get it back. So it's Naturalicious. publishes one on Instagram, and then on Facebook, we're at Naturalicious also, but I invite you to join the Naturalicious Nation. So if you type in Naturalicious Nation into Facebook, it's a private group, lots of really exclusive content, lots of really exclusive prizes and giveaways and things that you don't get on our normal public social media channels. So definitely on Facebook, type in Naturalicious Nation and join us there.
Perfect. Well, Gwen Jamir, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. It's been such a pleasure talking to you again.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.